This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
All right, so for today's episode, we do not have Mashun here because he's in Colombia. He's working full time, as he always is. But, you know, there is a very crazy hurricane going on in Florida right now, which he's very stressed about since he's not in Florida with his family. So I gave him the week off to kind of, you know, just be with himself, but also please pray for everyone in Florida. So we actually have a very special guest. We actually have not had any guests for season two yet. So she is the first one to join us. And a lot of people, you know, whenever I post this girly, everyone's like, oh my God, this is a duo that we never knew we needed. This is a collab that we always wanted. LA and New York meets again. So I'm so excited to do this because, as you guys know, I'm an introvert. So it's like the fact that I'm doing this solo podcast episode and then I'm doing it with Miss Maisha, who's from, she's actually from New York, but she moved to LA. And we have this powerhouse Bangladeshi girl here in my apartment who actually, she also slept over. She was my first ever sleepover as well. And now we're having a whole episode together. We're using the same mic and we're just excited to like do this because this is just like Big Sister 101. This is two girlies at the same time. Usually it's me and Mashun or just me by myself. And so now we got double the power of Big Sister Advice. We got a powerhouse here. She's doing 5 million things at the same time. And she's just incredible. If you guys don't know her, it's Maisha from LA, content creator slash business like creator slash like, what is it? Eva Collective, like marketing agency. She's graduated alumni from Columbia University. She moved cross country. She works as a corporate girly. Like, what doesn't she do? You tell me. But let me allow her to introduce herself because she deserves the whole stand, the whole mic.
Well, I think you have inflated my head a little too much. We got to deflate it. I'm just as excited, you guys. I was Mahua's biggest fan before I met her in real life. I think we've been following each other for how many years now? Mm-hmm. Probably like since 2017, 2016. Yeah. You used to see some of my, my baby days, my fetus days, because I showed you a picture from like when I was in high school and you were like, I remember this. This is an OG picture. So it's kind of crazy. So many years later, we got to connect and be friends. But hey, y'all, I'm so excited to come on here as one of your big apus on this podcast. If you don't know me, I'm Maisha, and I'd love to connect. I'm at Maisha Eva. Please, please be my friend. I love friends.
Wait, spell it out.
Maisha Eva. Mm-hmm. All right. So a quick background on myself. So like Mahua, I'm a city gal, you know, grew up in the boroughs. I grew up in the Bronx, in a bustling ethnic enclave, had a ton of like Yemenis and South Asians and, people from all different backgrounds living together. And it was so vibrant. And I really think that did shape who I am. And so in the better half of, you know, my time in the city, I got to work with so many cool nonprofits. I got to, you know, do all kinds of crazy things that you would like not be able to do in, I feel like, any other city. I think New York City is so special for that reason. So when I was younger, I actually started off mostly in the nonprofit space. I was working in education access. I was working with a lot of students. So I think we have a little bit of like a connection there. Mahua loves her kids and she loves to, like, there's a lot of power in that. You teach one child, they grow up, they'll remember you, and they're going to teach 10 other people. And then those 10 people teach 10 other people. So it's like a ripple effect of helping folks. So I also was in that space, not as a teacher, but I was tutoring. I was working with a lot of high school students in their college app process. And fast forward, you know, I did go to a public school myself in Harlem. And, you know, 70% of the students that went to that school were on free or reduced lunch. So, you know, there were a lot of things I noticed when I was in high school, like I didn't have access to some of the resources some of my peers had. And like, more like wealthier neighborhoods, right? Like they had really cool after school programs, they had tutorings, they had all this guidance. And I felt like, you know, at that age, we had like one guidance counselor to 500 students. And it, dude, it's tough. It's hard. And there's a huge gap in terms of information. So I remember at that time, I was like, I want to stop just talking about all the issues that we're seeing in public school systems, and I want to do something about it. And I chatted with a couple of my friends and my colleagues, and you know what? They were like, yo, we should do something. We should mentor the middle schoolers, you know, that are in this community. And so just from going, you know, having conversations with my teachers and, you know, my friends, we went to launching the first youth-led nonprofit in New York City. So it's entirely run by students, focused on education access for middle school students, right? Because often middle school students are forgotten in the process. When we think about education, we just think about like, oh, like the college app. Like, what about all the students that are like, unfortunately, in schools where the dropout rates are so high, or they just have all of these questions about what are interviews?
I was like thinking about, okay, so like when you hear this from an outside perspective, like someone doesn't know you, they're like, oh my god, this girl is probably like so old, like I can't do that, right? But the thing is, Maisha's literally 23 years old, right? 23. So it's like when she started all of this, she started in high school, and it's like not even because like she needed to do it because like she needed money or anything. It's not that. It's because she had that genuine passion. And what I love about Maisha is like she is like very young still, but she's accomplished so much in her life already. And I know a lot of people listening to this, it's they're high schoolers or they just don't know where to start. They don't know how to network. They don't know how to do something that they are passionate about. Like they just don't know where to start. And Maisha is like such a great older sister because she has started at such a young age and she's able to do like, you know, her passions on the back end as well. Like she's able to do her corporate job and then she's able to like balance her passions and what she actually wants to do with content and helping other people with marketing and so many different things. And so it's just like so inspiring to hear, you know, how you started in high school. I think like my question for you is like, how did you get started? So you said that you like started talking to other people that were like-minded like that, mm-hmm. and you had that passion because it, you know, the income level of the school directly impacted you. So that's why you wanted to make a change because you wanted to change it for your school and like also the next generation as well. What would you say to someone that's in high school right now, wanting to get into something like this, wanting to make a change in the world or like wanting to, you know, finally start something that's like going in the direction that they want to go in, you know?
Off the bat, let your passion fuel you. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds so cliche, but if you really, really want to get something done and get big things done, start. There is never the perfect time. I was, 17 years old. I had written a research paper for one of my English teachers about disparities with public school students, right? And like dropout levels. And I talked about tax fundings in that paper. And like I looked at like tax brackets and how that impacted or correlated to some degree with how many students were graduating from those schools in those neighborhoods. It went from being a research paper to being a conversation with my teacher at the time. Mm-hmm. And his wife used to work for the Department of Education. And I was like, I want to talk to her. Mm-hmm. That's the first step I took. I was like, I want to talk to as many people as I can who are in this field, who are doing this work in some capacity. And I was like, I just want to, you know, connect with them, build a relationship with them. And what that is that's networking, right? Like that is networking at its core. We often think networking is like a really formal thing where we have to go to an event. But no, networking is building a mutually beneficial relationship with all kinds of people. In this case, I was talking to my teacher, right? And his wife and other students who went through the public school system. So the way I got started was, one, I identified the why. I identified, one, what is the need I'm trying to serve? What value am I trying to bring? And what is the problem I'm trying to solve here? From there, I identified my support system. So my support system at the time was my teacher, my English teacher, his wife, and maybe a couple of friends who were feeling the same things I was feeling, right? And then from there, I kind of made a game plan. I told myself like, hey, this is an idea I have. Who are the people I need to go pitch this idea to? So I'll give you an example. It started off with a very simplified formula. We wanted to create a mentorship program. And that mentorship program would basically use all the high school students in our high school, and we'd pair those students to middle schoolers. Middle schoolers that were, how do I explain this? So my high school was a big building which had high school students and middle school students. And in that area, we had a bunch of middle schools. So what we did is we paired high school students to middle schoolers in the same area. And it was like a big, big brother, big sister type of program. But it expanded from there after we talked to our resources in different nonprofits and in the Department of Education. We turned into a full-blown curriculum.
So you did this all in high school?
All in high school. And I'm not trying to take credit in the sense that I could have done this had I done it alone. I had an army of people. I had, you know, my best friends backing me up. They were the operations managers. They were the social media chairs. One of my really good friends, Norfell, if you're hearing this, oh my gosh, like, he is so social. He really made students excited to join the program. Every time we had an info session, we would send Norfell because he's just so good at getting them riled up. Like, we did not want it to be a tutoring session or extra work for the kids. So yeah, we had a big team of people, and we got the resources through our school. So tap into your network first. And sometimes look at peer-to-peer connections. You know, when we think of networking, we think, how do we go five levels up to the director or to the partners or to people who are like, yeah, you don't go to the highest level person. Look at your peers. Look at your best friends. Look at the people in your age bracket. How can you build relationships with them first? Could they help you in any capacity? Maybe they can connect you with somebody, right? That's what happened for me. From there, I got connected to a federal organization at Columbia. This was like when I was still in high school. And I pitched the organization to them as an asset for them, saying like, hey, you guys do all this great work at your nonprofit for high school students. And I know you have a smaller middle school program. I want to bring structured curriculum to your middle school program. And it's entirely youth led. So our community is made up of people who are all students, like high school and college students. It's a really unique program. Kids are excited to be a part of this. We pitched it. We showed them the statistics. We showed them the impact. We spoke from a place of value and storytelling. People don't understand how freaking impactful storytelling can be. Like, talk about your experiences. Talk about why you're so passionate about this. I literally said that, you know, this is a true story. When I was in seventh grade, a teacher looked at me and said to my whole class, guys, you just need to get a 70 to pass so that I can still have my salary. Or 60, I forgot, it was 60 or 70. It's like very like the potential placed on us was already so low. And I remember what that did to my like confidence or the lack thereof, right? Like, it really depleted my confidence. And I remember like, damn, like, there's so much I went through when I lived in the Bronx that like, if I didn't have mentors that I sought out myself, I would not be in the position I am today, because a lot of those people invested in me early on. And I wanted to create that same environment where we can invest in, you know, the next generation of children, of students, especially at an impressionable age like middle school. So all in all, fast forward, we got connected to folks at Columbia, pitched it to them, got some funding, you know, like got our 501c3, and really just like from there started tapping into our communities, doing fundraisers, etc. But yeah, it went like, I was part of this organization for 4 years. We built a really big team. I don't do it anymore. But when I look back at it, about how I got started, and when I talk about my career journey, I always mention this, like, my career didn't start after I graduated. Your career starts from the minute like you step into something and step into a role and you have a responsibility. Heck, if you were a babysitter, that is a career. You know, you can, there's so many transferable skills you can talk about right from there. So like, just like really when you think back about like opportunities, I always say like, take whatever opportunity comes your way. You never.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Know where you're gonna end up 5 years from now, but everything is transferable skills.
I feel like some takeaways that I got from that is like, first, I think a lot of kids are scared to speak to their teachers, and a lot of them are just shy. I was shy in high school too, where I'd never spoke to any of my teachers. But it's like, speak to your teachers because they're so knowledgeable. Speak to like any admin, and then after graduation also speak to them because they have so many connects. And just having a good relationship with people that you see on the reg it's just so beneficial because it's like you don't need to have a part-time job in high school, because a lot of people are like, you know, I didn't have the time to have a job in high school. I had to constantly like be focused on academics. But just having, you know, the passion to start a club or having the passion to do something that's related to your community, that's how you start. You know, you don't have to have the networking where you need to have this big career in high school and like know what you have to do. You know, you just have to start small, talk to the people in your school. And I feel like a lot of people also feel like they're running out of time because they didn't have that job or they didn't have those networking skills in high school. So I think, like, you know, going into you going to Columbia, like, how did you continue that? And how did you like continue to foster those networking skills where you have this like big four job now, you know, like, how did you do that? Because I think a lot of people just feel really stuck because, first of all, you know, people have social anxiety. A lot of South Asians, especially, they never really had the chance to just talk to other people, I guess, because, you know, parents pushed academics on them. And then a lot of people also didn't have the chance to work because they had to focus on school. So it's like their only chance to work is outside of graduation after that. And that's like in their mid-20s, you know? So like, what's your advice on networking in college and how did you do that, especially since you went to such a good college? Oh yeah, and something else that I want to add on top of that, how you said storytelling is so important. I think a lot of kids, a lot of people in general, they think math and science is like the core subjects. You have to only focus on that. But there is a lot of beauty in, you know, like the humanities, in storytelling, in English, and just like being a person first instead of just spitting out like math facts. Like, yeah, that's important, sure. But it's also important for you to like show people that you're a person and that there's a figure behind like what you believe in. Like, it's not just like factual, you know, it's not just like logistics, but it's also like there's purpose behind it, you know, there's stories behind it, there's like relatability behind it. And it's really important to like, you know, be also focused on humanities, be focused on English, be focused on like essay writing, or just like, you know, be a person. Like, a lot of people just think it's like math, science, and that's it, but there's so much beyond that, you know.
Okay, so your question about, you know, now you're stepping into college and you are now in this space where you got to start thinking about internships. Mm-hmm. You got to start thinking about networking.
We'll talk a little bit briefly on how you even like had this transition going to Columbia, getting the scholarship, like just having this, you know, going from like a low income area high school, mm-hmm, and then going into Columbia. Like, how that's like a dream for so many people, mm-hmm, that, you know, that they want to accomplish.
You know, I always say it's not about where you went. It's about what you do when you're there. I know some of the most phenomenal human beings from so many different institutions. And they have startups. They have, you know, their own beauty line. They have so many cool things going for them. They're working at so many awesome places. Some of them are my colleagues, you know. So I think the focus here is, once you get to college, what do you do there, right? It's not about once you get to the best school ever. Because let's be real, our parents already put enough of that pressure on us. So I'm here to say, relax. It's not the end of the world. Where you go is not the end of the world, right? It's what you do when you're there. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, like, think about it, reflect on yourselves. How many of you guys have ever tapped into your alumni network? Probably not. If you go on to LinkedIn right now and you type in a company that is your dream company to intern at, I can guarantee you there will at least be one Hunter alumni or one Columbia alumni that is in a role or a position in that company or has a mutual in that company. So your network is so much greater than you really think. That's the first. But I'll backtrack and start from a place of like, so you're like a freshman or sophomore, what do you do then? One, take advantage of those career fairs. I know they're so intimidating. I was super intimidated. Everyone used to tell me, don't go to a career fair until you're like a junior or a senior in college, right? They're like, that's where the job opportunities really are. I actually think that's not true. I think, yes, majority of the people that do come to recruit are recruiting for people who are going to graduate soon. Yes, but there are still opportunities out there for people who are like still freshman or sophomore, right? And two, it's going to give you experience. Mm-hmm. You got to rip that Band-Aid off and you got to just put yourself out there. You got to learn how to pitch yourself. And sometimes, yes, your first time is going to be hella uncomfortable. I'm not lying. It's very uncomfortable. As a freshman, I was like, where the heck am I? Like, I'm in my little blazer. I don't even think my blazer matched my outfit. Like, I don't even know what I was doing.
Isn't it like fake it till you make it? Like, you have to rehearse the pitch and then you fake it until you were confident about it.
Exactly. And you know what the best trick is? I'm sure you guys all have laptops. Turn your laptop on, go to photo booth, and literally practice introducing yourself on camera. Like, that's so crazy. And my rule of thumb is when you introduce yourself is you start off like a real human being. Like, hey, I'm Maisha. I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up in New York. I'm really passionate about XYZ. And I noticed that, you know, your role at this firm aligns to these passions. I've connect them in real quick, right? So you sell yourself, you sell your passion kind of, and then right after that you make it about the person. Mm-hmm. People always mess this part up. You make it about the person you met. Mm-hmm. You kind of like, you know, make sure that you did your research or you take that opportunity to ask about them. Like, it looks like you work for a company that really cares about education access as well. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what drew you to this company. Tell me about your time there. What are some projects you're really excited about? People love to talk about themselves, especially in corporate America. I've learned that.
I feel like people remember you more when you actually have a conversation with them that involves them. And it's like, you ask them questions, so it forces them to talk about themselves. And that's because they meet so many people, especially at career fairs. Like, they're meeting people constantly. They're not going to remember you, especially if you give them a resume. It's going in a whole pile, you know? So it's like, if you actually engage with them, they're going to remember you and like follow up with you if you follow up, you know?
And when you follow up, pro tip, you always like hint at something you guys talked about and then they'll remember you. Trust me. Now that I'm on the other end where I do interview people coming in, or at least I'm a part of the recruiting process, these are brownie points. These really are brownie points that help you. I'll give you guys a story. So I actually went into the career fair when I was a sophomore, had no freaking clue what the heck Big Four was. I thought they only do tax and audit and accounting. And I'm like, this is not for me. Guess what? That was the first time I felt like I learned what consulting was in my life. I had no idea that was even a career, guys, when I was a sophomore. I was like, what the heck is consulting? You get paid to talk to companies? What the hell? Are we like therapists for businesses? Like, what are we? My mom still doesn't even know what it is. Look, I swear, if you ask my mom, she's going to be like, oh, she does this thing where she like talks all day on the camera. Like, in meetings. Sometimes she walks by, she's like, are you even speaking English now? But yeah, so whenever people ask me, I'm like, consulting fell on my lap, because as a sophomore, I just went to this career fair, and you know, one of the representatives, she's from the Bronx as well, Canadian and from the Bronx, and guess freaking what, 4 or 5 years later, she's still one of my mentors today. And I met her when I was like a little baby, you know? And we just hit it off and had a great conversation. I was very honest with her that I never really explored a career in consulting, but after reading more about it, I'm genuinely very interested, because I worked on strategy for nonprofits. So here, ding, ding, ding. Never worked at a corporate job before, but I used my nonprofit experience saying, here's the strategy work I did to fundraise for my nonprofit to increase the quota of students from 12 students per academic year to 34 students per academic year, right? And here's the initiatives I took. Here's how I fundraised X amount of money.
That's so interesting, because I feel like when a lot of people are trying to go for a job that they've never had before, it's like they think that they need prior experience in exactly that job field, but they don't realize that a lot of the other jobs are like nonprofits, anything that they're involved in, it could play a huge part in that job. And they don't know how to like pitch it, though. They don't know how to tell people like, oh yeah, I have these skills in this other thing, even though it's not the same thing. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, they just don't even try because they just assume it's not going to work out because they don't have that direct relation to the other job, you know? So I feel like something that's really interesting that you can talk about is like how to go for a job that you haven't had experience in, but you know that you've had previous like skills that can work for it, you know? Like you work at a big company now, you know? So what did you have before that, you know, isn't really like that, but also is? Like what do like
transferable skills?
Yeah.
So any job you've done in your life, even if you babysat your cousins, your siblings, if you tutored them, that's all transferable skills. What you do is you identify, okay, what is this role looking for? What are the key responsibilities? So in this case, in consulting, you're working very like client facing. You're working with Fortune 500 companies, and you're really just helping them through like strategy work. So I specifically work in M&A, and so dumb it down a little bit because I didn't even know what this. I didn't even know what it was. So M&A is mergers and acquisitions. So whenever a company buys another company, acquires another company, let's say Sprint and T-Mobile, right? Like that's an M&A activity when they came together. Yeah. Exactly. So before you as a T-Mobile user even find out about this huge M&A activity, we pretty much do the strategy for it and what are the key things that, you know, you have to keep in mind before it goes live and a customer finds out, right? Like thinking through key risks, thinking through a timeline, thinking through culture, who's gonna like, you know, get fired and what departments are gonna come together. So many factors about culture. Are the culture of the two companies being, you know, kept in mind? The marketing, the branding, the sales, all of that, right? But that's not the point of this. The point is, I just told you all these things about M&A, but I didn't do any of that in nonprofit work, right? But the way I sold myself for this position or job, even when I was connecting with this recruiter, not to say you just get the job by talking to a recruiter. I obviously had to go through the process of applying. But during my application process, the way I sold and pitched myself was through identifying the transferable skills, right? So both consulting and nonprofit work requires you to think big picture. It requires you to do a little bit of strategy and thinking about curriculum, thinking about high-level business organizational structures, right? Like I was a founder, I was wearing multiple hats when I launched my nonprofit, The Link Scholars, and I had to be the operations manager. I had to be the marketing manager. I had to be the, you know, stakeholder relationships manager to get donors to get funding for the nonprofit. So I was like, okay. So I talked, it's not client facing, but it's stakeholder facing. I'm talking to a lot of people. I'm interacting with a lot of people. I'm moving the needle in my organizations through these meetings. That is very transferable to consulting, where that's what you're doing. You're talking to a lot of clients. You're interviewing them. You're understanding their business. You're understanding their problems and their needs. And so just really like pulling and teasing out what skill sets you already have and like applying it to how that will make you a good fit for XYZ role, like that's going to be big for you. I will say that in my career, I've seen people come from so many different backgrounds. Like I've seen people come from sociology backgrounds in consulting. I've seen people come from, you know, English major backgrounds. Like I've seen it all. So there's no perfect role. I'll give you a fun fact. I worked on a project where two people I worked with came from industry, health, like healthcare. They worked in hospitals, and now they're in one of the groups in my company that specifically works on healthcare clients and projects. So like your big pharmaceutical companies or your big like hospitals or whatever, right? Like, so believe it or not, your skills are so transferable. Like, what if you're a nurse one day and the next day you want to go into a corporate job? Like, you'd be shocked at how many healthcare tech companies there are, right? So all I'm saying is that you don't need the perfect experience. You just need experience that can really translate over well.
I think my last question to, like, close off this, like, corporate, like, how to get yourself into a good job or into the corporate world. What is the ideal resume format? Because in my program for childhood ed, we said that, you know, the resume that's like just plain white paper with like the black Times Roman font is kind of just like overused and it's very like overdone and very like basic. And a lot of employers kind of see that in the whole file and they just don't want to look at it anymore. So it's kind of, you have to put yourself like out there in a different font, different color, like whole different thing. My second question is, do you think that cold calling or cold messaging people on LinkedIn is like the way to go?
I'll keep this one quick because I want to get out of the corporate topic before we wrap up our podcast, because we are coming close to a close. Mm-hmm. So quick resume tips. One, always quantify your impact. Mm. So whenever you've worked on something, don't list out what your responsibility was. List out what impact you made. Mm. So instead of like, I was the operations lead for this nonprofit and I worked with 20 plus students and five mentors It's as the operations lead, I was able to increase efficiency for launching new curriculum by like 25% by introducing the curriculum 3 months earlier. Like, I mean, that is some number I made up out of my booty. But, you know, the point is here that you want to quantify it as much as possible. Like, as a fundraising manager, I was able to increase funding by 36% from 2020 to 2021, you know? So always quantify your impact as much as possible. People don't really like to see pictures on resumes. Keep it black and white and simple. You also have to remember a lot of these positions have an ATS system. So you want to make sure it's formatted as a doc or a PDF because it has to go through the system. And if you, I think, do it through like Canva or anything else, sometimes that's hard for the system to like flag keywords in order to screen you through the process. So that's my quick tidbit on the corporate chapter. Most importantly, networking, cold calling, and cold messaging. Trust me, whatever you don't do, you won't ever know if you'll get a response. So just do it. Like, you'll message 50 people. Exactly. You'll message 50 people and like 10 people respond. That's still 10 people that can help you get your foot in the door. So yeah, send out those LinkedIn messages. You can always copy and paste them and personalize like one sentence. And identify people who have a connector with you. Like, maybe they went to the same school as you. Maybe they have a mutual. Maybe they're a friend of yours or a friend of a friend, whatever it might be. So identify people who really would want to support you and who have a connection to you. I know for a fact that whenever somebody from my school reaches out to me, I'm like more likely to respond because I'm like, oh, they found a connector and, you know, I want to help my people. I would say go for it. What do you have to lose? I have a couple of templates on my profile if you guys need help for how to reach out to people. Masha Eva. But yeah, that's the corporate chapter. All in all, I think one message I want to say is like, dude, yes, your full-time job pays the bills, but that shouldn't just be the only thing you do in life. I mean, Mohu is a great example of that. She's so multifaceted. She's a teacher. She's an artist. She's a podcaster. She's a small business owner. And it's so wonderful to see because I feel like at her core, all of those things bring value to a lot of people. And it keeps her happy. That's the most important thing. It keeps her grounded and keeps her happy. And similarly, I didn't want to lose out of touch with the things that I value a lot and with the community work I value a lot. So while I'm not doing nonprofit work, I did launch my own marketing agency slash strategy practice. And it's also a collective. So we not only help women founded and BIPOC founded brands scale on social media, but we also host events for creators and doers and thinkers and entrepreneurs to come mingle and get to know each other and network and grow together and just support each other and create a really awesome ecosystem of folks who are just like so inspiring. Like people like put all the Mahuas in the same room. Like imagine the crazy things that can happen. So now like with my full-time job, I'm really blessed to be in a position where I'm still able to tap into that creative side with my agency and also with content creation to work with really great brands that I love and value. So that's my big advice to you guys, that you don't have to fully love the job that you do. Sometimes the job that you have, you like it enough and it pays the bills. Sometimes you love your job. That's also awesome. But it doesn't have to be the only thing you do. If you love art, if you love photography and you want to do it as a side hustle, 100% do it. It will keep you sane. It'll keep you exercising a different part of your brain and it'll give you some crazy great friendships. And that's how Mahu and I met, right? Because of our world on Instagram. Like, if you think about it, some of my closest best friends actually I met through Instagram. Like, people were going to be my bridesmaid at my wedding whenever that happens. So I really think social media and the work we do can be a great catalyst for meeting some amazing folks who will support you, who will become like really good friends, mentors.
Something that I love about Maisha is the fact that she has like 10 million hats on. She can do so many things. She's Wonder Woman, literally. And like something else about her is that like she's a Bangladeshi powerhouse, but also on top of that, she's not gatekeeping anything. You know, there's a lot of like people, South Asian people that don't really want to see other people win. Yeah, there's like a whole other supportive community, but there's also a group where it's like they don't want to share certain knowledge with certain people because they want to kind of be on top, right? But Maisha like literally helps anyone that asks her anything, and she's like the oldest sister for everyone, and she's just so inspiring, you know, like when I, like she's younger than me and like I'm so inspired by her. Like she says words sometimes and I like just nod because like I don't understand what she's saying, but just like I know what she's saying is great. And it's like I just love the impact that she's having on not only females, Bangladeshis, but young people as well. The fact that we didn't even like touch on this, but like the fact that she moved across the country to LA for her job from New York to LA, and then like she solo traveled like for months and months. Like she lived in London for 2 years by herself. Like she's just like, you know, she's such an inspo because like, you know, I have been wanting to solo travel like because of her, you know, like she did it for so long. She did it from like such a young age. So inspirational, you know, especially for young women that want to like be independent, you know, move across the country or like travel, whatever it is. And it's just like so nice, you know, just to see that. I know. After I do mine, I'll recommend it to you guys too. I'll tell you the tea about it. But I think my last question, because I know a lot of people were asking this, especially to me and you, because both me and you do a bunch of stuff, you know? So a lot of people ask, how do you manage your time, right? So for me personally, when I do anything, I have like a calendar. I make sure, just because I probably have like undiagnosed ADHD or something, I personally write down everything that I have to do the night before so I know what I have to wake up to. Sometimes when I don't have anything for my planner the day of, I have nothing to wake up to. So I'll wake up late, like, you know, I just don't have any passion that day or inspiration. So I'll write down everything that I have to do. I highlight certain things for priority. And I just like, I'm the type of person that when they say they'll do something, I'll do it, right? A lot of people also think there's like a secret to it. I think we're just very motivated. We're very like driven. We know what our goal is. We know that we want to help our immigrant parents. We know that we want to pursue our passion. So we just like let that drive us.
And there's nobody to trust fall on. Mm-hmm. This is you, baby. Like you're just doing it and there's no one to fall back on. So I think that's also a motivator in itself.
Yep.
And a lot of you hearing this are probably in a similar position.
Yep. No, exactly. It's like you have to literally do it for yourself, for your parents. And it's like you have to hold yourself accountable. So I think that's like the biggest thing for me. Like I don't have a secret. Sometimes, yeah, I don't have, like I don't sleep well. Like sometimes I'm skipping lunch, I'm skipping breakfast and it's really unhealthy, but like I get it done, you know? And it's like, yes, I want this to motivate other people to work hard and like do whatever they have to do. But obviously like at the end of the day, don't like skip lunch, don't skip like your sleep, whatever it is. But like you have to be the one to drive yourself. You can't expect other people to motivate you. You have to like have that discipline to like do it yourself. You have to have that like that end factor, you know? So that should be the thing that drives you.
So funny. Oh my gosh, my girl Mashiat, shout out to Mashiat from Jewelry Magazine. She introduced me on one of her events, like meet Maisha. She has 36 hours in her day while we all have 24 hours in our day. She's so funny. No, but on some real-ish, I will say one thing. Well, this goes for anything in life, friendships, relationships, people, careers, opportunities. You got to figure out where you want to spend your time and you got to figure out where you're going to cut back. And so when you figure out what you want to prioritize in that specific time period of your life, it starts to make sense how you're going to prioritize it. So for me, I knew some things that were really important to me was, you know, progressing in my career, being able to do, I did have to scale back in the work I did with my content creation and even the agency when I did, you know, accept the full-time offer. But I was still able to do some of the things I loved on the weekends and after hours. And I still was able to host events once a month. Maybe it's not as frequently, but
also you have to say no to so many like hangouts because you're just like working 24 hours. Like you have to have that discipline where it's like,
Sometimes you do have to say no. It's just about that time and place. Like, let's say you tell yourself, okay, March to, I don't know, August, I really want to bootstrap myself and launch a business. Like, girl, sit down, write it down, make a roadmap and do it. Get it done. Yes. So my two, or I'll say my three productivity tips. First is identify and roadmap your goals. What I mean by this is, so in consulting, we literally help our clients build a timeline for where when all key activities are going to happen until day one, which is when the customer finds out, right? Like, or it goes live that this big M&A activity is happening. I like to think of that even for our own lives, right? We give ourselves a timeline that, okay, from January to March, I'm going to start thinking about the branding for my new startup. Mm-hmm. I'll give a hypothetical example. And then from March to April, I'm going to think about, you know, people I would need to hire as contractors. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I need to start sampling products. Like, I'm building a roadmap for myself, right, for the business. And when you do that, you can reverse engineer. So like, if I know 1 year from now I'm going to launch my business, I can reverse engineer and figure out what those big milestones need to be. And this goes for anything. It could be for college applications. It could be for Mahua dropping a new like clothing product line. So road mapping is really key, and reverse engineering is key once you have the big goals. And then the second tip for productivity is pen and paper. Very simple. Mm-hmm. Writing things down. You are more likely to remember if you write it down. So I love to have sticky notes near me all the time. And then third, my favorite thing in the world is a really good digital planning system. I use Trello and Google Calendar just because I try to manage between all my like tasks and all my deadlines. I feel like Trello is the place where I can really mind dump. I love that word, mind dump.
Yeah.
Trello is like really cool. It's like little cards, and you can like organize based on work, personal, Eva Collective, content creation, whatever you want. And you can like, it's so cool. You can organize it as like, let's say I have TikToks I need to fill. I'm actually building out a template, by the way, that I want to launch for you guys, like a Trello template, my ultimate productivity Trello template. It's in the works, but essentially I'll give you an example. Like, let's say I want to brain dump like 30 TikTok ideas. I'll brain dump it, and then I organize it based on ready to film. Mm-hmm. And then film, which is where I like move them over. Mm-hmm. And then posting date. Posted, and like it's like you can organize and move the cards over as you get things done. Mm-hmm. Let's say I have a to-do list. I have a daily to-do list section, and then I have a monthly to-do list section. I brain dump my monthly to-do list section onto the monthly area, and then I move the cards over to the daily areas. Mm-hmm. Based on like what I need to get done daily. So my digital system is what really keeps me sane, and then Google Calendar, I live off of it. Even when I need to take a walk or meet a friend, I put everything on my Google Calendar. With that said, guys, you can't be everywhere at all times. So if you need to take a break and you need to deprioritize something to prioritize something else, like let's say in that week it's your mental health, please do it. Mm-hmm. Because I've been there where I've been burnt out and it's not fun. And you need to work hard, but you won't be able to work hard until you work on yourself as well. Mm-hmm. So make sure you're the happiest, healthiest version of yourself. Mm-hmm. Before you give 110% to everything else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think like once you're burnt out, it's just so hard to get out of that. So just, you know, take the precautions where you don't work yourself to the point where you get burnt out, because once you're in that phase, it's just so hard to get out of it. And I think two other things to like add on top of that of productivity is if you say like, oh, I have to do this one thing, but I'll just do it later. I'll do it tomorrow. Just do it right then and there, especially if it's something small. It's just like get it over with, because the more you delay it, the more you're not going to do it. Yeah, if it's like an email, something small that takes like a few seconds, a few minutes, just do it right when you remember it, because first of all, you're going to forget, or second, you're just going to keep delaying it. And then second, whenever I do my to-do list, I put like things that don't take too much hard work, and then also things that are a lot of, you know, takes time and hard work, and it just have a combo of both. So like you can kind of knock out like the low priority, low work type of things, and it makes you feel productive, because sometimes you have those days where you don't feel like doing much, but like seeing those like ticks on your to-do list makes you feel like you're doing more, you know,
like little wins versus big wins.
Yeah, exactly. Like some days you just need to like get out of bed, and that's fine, you know. So it's like have those little wins and those big wins, combine it both on your to-do list if you're like a visual type of person like me. So we end our episodes with like one advice. It could be like a random thing. It could literally just be like eat food. Like, you know, it could be anything. So do you have any pieces of advice that you want to say to our listeners to end off this episode, even though we had so much more to talk about, like solo traveling, but we'll keep that for another episode.
Oh, we gotta do an episode on solo traveling, my friends. I was able to travel for free when I was in college, so I would love to share that.
Yeah.
With you guys. But one piece of advice I will say is we all know what imposter syndrome is, and we all experience it in multiple spaces. Mm-hmm. It is a part of our reality, especially as a woman in a lot of these spaces where you're probably the only Bangladeshi woman there or whatever. Mm-hmm. It might be in school or work or wherever else. But I will always tell you guys one thing. Rewire your brain to not think as imposter syndrome, but think as growth mindset. Wherever you go, you will have fear. You will be uncomfortable. You will be scared. You might not be the smartest person in the room, But that's okay. Like, how do you get to that next stage? What steps do you need to take to, like, prepare yourself? What learnings do you need to do, right? And then the other thing I will say is stop waiting for the perfect opportunity and the perfect timing.
There's never a perfect time. There's never a perfect time. Just do it.
Just do it. Because guess what? Somebody half as qualified as you is already taking that opportunity from your hands. Yep. And that happens in so many job settings. That happens in opportunities. That happens with brand deals. It's like, guys, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? A rejection? Rejection?
Yeah.
Yeah. And rejection is redirection. You get even better for the next one. Mm-hmm. But I loved speaking with you guys. I loved being here. I love Mahua. I love the community she's building with this podcast. I recommend it to everybody I know. So if you're hearing this, you are so awesome for being one of the podcast listeners. And honestly, this is so cool. It makes me want to do podcasts more often. I'd love to stay in touch with you guys if you have something that really like resonated in this episode, either something Mahua said or I said. Let us know in the comments. Reach out to me. I love to hear from people. You can even like email me. It's just maishaeva@gmail.com. Whatever you want to do, like I'm here for you guys. Like I've been there where I had questions. I felt like I was alone in the process, and that's not a fun feeling. There's hundreds of people that want to support you and see you grow. So tap into us, and I hope you really do see us as your older sisters. Yeah. Or
episode was just like so needed, right? Like we've been wanting to do something like this, and like so many of you guys look at us as just like the older sisters, and we love you guys so much. So thank you so much for listening. I think before I end, my advice would be like, if you see someone on Instagram, on social media, and you think they're pretty, you think they're cool, just like compliment them, just like DM them, because like that's like networking in on its own, you know? Yeah, just like make the move, because like what's the worst that can happen? It can be the best decision of your life. But thank you so much for tuning in. We love you guys. Please follow Maisha on Instagram, TikTok. She's killing it everywhere. She's literally the Bangladeshi inspo that you need. And follow Difficult Dish on Instagram, which is @DifficultDish, and TikTok, which is @DifficultDishPodcast. And please rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But we love you so much, and thank you so much for listening, especially to our first guest of season 2. We'll see you guys later next Friday.
Bye. Let us know if you want other topics as well.
Yep, we're here.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.